Imagine you're a farmer, back in first century Palestine.
Oh, high stakes.
Right. Your entire family's survival literally depends on this one finite, heavy bag of seeds.
Yeah, you definitely don't just toss it around for fun.
Exactly. I mean, you do the math, you meticulously plow the land, you prep the soil, and you only let those seeds fall where you have an absolute statistical guarantee that they're going to grow into food.
Because it's a massive investment. In that era, agricultural efficiency wasn't just like a best practice. It was literally the difference between life and starvation.
Which is exactly why the premise of this deep dive today is so completely fascinating.
Really is.
We are taking one of history's most universally known texts, the biblical parable of the sower, and we're unpacking it through the lens of esoteric and mystical traditions.
Yeah, we're looking at it in a totally different way.
Right. Our mission is to show you how this story isn't actually some quaint, ancient farming lesson. It's this profound, incredibly detailed map of your own consciousness.
But to even see that map, you first have to realize that the farmer in this story is essentially committing agricultural malpractice.
He really is. He is wildly, like comically inefficient.
Yeah, just recklessly throwing this precious seed onto solid rock, onto walking paths, and straight into weed-choked ditches.
And the initial absurdity of that image is the entire point, right?
Exactly. The mystical sources we're looking at, they frame this not as a story about a bad farmer, but as this radical theological statement. It's about the indiscriminate, extravagant nature of divine grace.
Okay, let's unpack this. So the inefficiency is actually a feature, not a bug.
Right.
The sower, representing the divine or the source or whatever you want to call it, doesn't wait for you to perfectly till your own soil before offering up spiritual truth.
And that goes entirely against how we normally view spiritual readiness.
We always assume we have to be good enough first.
Right, or morally pure or deeply meditative before we can receive any kind of ultimate truth. But in this framework, the seed, which represents truth or light, is constantly being broadcast.
Like an infinite outbound frequency.
Yes, it pays absolutely no attention to human readiness.
But I mean, if the broadcasting never stops and the seed is just falling everywhere all the time, that leads to a pretty uncomfortable conclusion.
It really does.
It means the failure of that seed to grow in your life is never a supply problem. Like the universe isn't holding out on you.
No, the source is never running out of seed. The bottleneck is entirely on the receiving end.
It's purely an issue of receptivity, which forces us to look past the sower and actually analyze the ground itself.
Right, the soil.
Yeah, the story lists four different types of soil. And this is where the early church fathers and the Christian contemplatives take the whole narrative into a completely different dimension.
They absolutely refuse to read this as a story about four different types of people in a crowd.
Like the good people over here and the bad people over there.
Yeah, exactly. Instead, the core esoteric concept here is that these four soils are four distinct states of consciousness, and all four of them exist within you, the individual listener, right now, as you navigate your own spiritual journey.
We are mapping your inner geography.
We are.
So if it's all about receptivity, then the first failure mode in that geography is just, well, total impermeability.
Yeah.
The story calls it the path.
Right, the
The
path.
seed falls on a hardened walking path, it bounces off the packed dirt, and birds immediately swoop down and eat it.
And our sources identified the soil as the state of the hardened ego. Think about the physical mechanics of a path.
It's just compressed dirt, right?
Yeah, dirt that has been walked on so many times, compressed by so much traffic that it becomes basically indistinguishable from stone. Psychologically, this is the consciousness that has been entirely compressed by the mundane.
Oh, wow. It's the brain calloused by the daily grind.
Exactly.
It's like trying to absorb a profound, life-altering truth while you're stuck in gridlock traffic, you're late for a performance review, and your phone is just buzzing with 20 cynical news alerts.
Right, you're completely armored.
Your mind is just covered in this armor of worldly traffic, so a moment of pure grace just ricochets off the surface.
And the text gives us this brilliant, honestly, slightly terrifying explanation for what happens to that ricocheting truth.
The birds.
The birds swoop in. In mystical traditions, and especially in ancient demonology, these birds represent intrusive, fragmented thoughts.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they were often viewed as lower spiritual entities that literally feed on a human mind's lack of focus.
Wait, so checking my phone or getting distracted during a profound moment isn't just an accident, it's an active defense mechanism.
It is the ego defending its own rigidity.
That is wild.
When a deep spiritual truth brushes up against a hardened ego, the mind feels existential discomfort. The ego doesn't want to change, so it actively generates distraction.
So it manufactures a random anxiety.
Or a sudden urge to check your email. Or a cynical, sarcastic judgment about whatever you just heard. Those are the birds.
They steal the insight before it can even begin to penetrate the concrete.
Exactly.
We've all had those moments. You hear a concept that should fundamentally alter your worldview, and 3 seconds later, you're wondering what you're going to have for lunch.
The birds got the seed.
The birds got the seed. But, okay, if the problem with the path is that the seed can't get in at all, what happens when it does penetrate, but the dirt is deceiving?
That brings us to a much more dangerous state of consciousness, which is the rocky ground.
Okay, the rocky ground.
In the narrative, the seed falls on shallow soil that's covering a bed of solid rock. And it actually springs up incredibly fast. It looks like a massive success.
Right.
But then the sun comes out, and because the plant has no deep root system, it scorches, withers, and dies just as quickly.
Which feels totally counterintuitive. I mean, on the surface, if I'm trying to grow spiritually, rapid growth seems like exactly what I want.
Right, it looks good.
So why is the story framing that immediate explosive growth as a failure?
Because it's the illusion of quick enlightenment. Our sources define this state of consciousness as spiritual emotionalism.
Spiritual emotionalism. So getting high on the idea of spirituality rather than the practice of it.
Yes, exactly. It's the consciousness of the seeker who treats spirituality like a consumer product. They jump from one charismatic guru to the next, from a trendy breathwork class to a new meditation app.
Constantly chasing that feeling of euphoria.
Right. That euphoric high is the plant springing up quickly. It feels amazing. But they entirely lack the deep, quiet, repetitive, and frankly boring discipline required to sustain actual structural transformation.
Oh, man. It's the dopamine hit of buying a completely new, intense workout routine, but never actually doing the grueling work of going to the gym day after day.
Exactly that. You get the emotional reward of feeling like you've changed without any of the structural change.
And the crucial diagnostic tool here is the sun.
Yes, the sun. In the story, the sun scorches the shallow plant. In alchemy and mysticism, the sun, the blazing light of truth, is never a punishment.
It's an agent of purification.
Yeah, exactly. It's designed to burn away the false superficial ego.
So the sun represents the inevitable friction of real life. Tribulation. Like the moment your car breaks down, or someone insults you, or you face a real tragedy.
And if your spiritual insight isn't deeply rooted in the core of your being, if it's just sitting in a thin layer of enthusiasm on top of your unresolved ego, the heat of a real-life crisis will instantly incinerate that superficial growth.
Wow. It withers because it was never truly grounded.
Right. The alchemy demands deep roots to survive the fire of purification.
Okay, so we have the calloused mind of the path and the shallow dopamine chasing of the rocks. But what if someone is actually willing to do the boring discipline?
Okay.
What if the soil is deep and they aren't just looking for a quick high?
Yeah.
Why does the harvest still fail?
That introduces the third state, which is arguably the most insidious for our modern era, the thorny ground.
The divided psyche.
Right. In the parable, the seed falls into deep, nutrient-rich dirt. The plant starts to grow beautifully.
But it's surrounded by thorns.
Yes. And the thorns grow up alongside the wheat and eventually choke the life out of it. The source material describes this individual as someone who genuinely desires spiritual growth. They are putting in the work.
But their consciousness is simultaneously consumed by maintaining the illusion of material control and societal status.
It is the ultimate attempt to serve two masters. You desperately want the grounded, unified spiritual life, but you are just as fiercely attached to the deceitfulness of wealth and the endless craving for external validation.
Because spiritually speaking, an anxious mind is a crowded mind.
That's a great way to put it.
To put a mechanical metaphor on this, it's like your brain's CPU and RAM. It's like having 50 background tabs open on your computer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
25 of those tabs are running high-definition videos of your past mistakes, and the other 25 tabs are running intense, predictive simulations of future disasters.
And your system just crashes.
Right. The seed, the spiritual truth, is the main window you want to look at. But your system completely crashes because there is zero processing power left for the present moment.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize what the text is saying, because the sources specifically identify what those thorns are in temporal terms.
Temporal terms. Like, yeah. Time.
Yeah. The thorns represent anxiety, which is the consciousness living entirely in the future, and regret, which is the consciousness trapped in the past.
Wow. And the divine spark can only exist in the present moment.
Right. It has to be now.
But your psyche's energy is being violently drained by the thorns of tomorrow's worries and yesterday's ghosts. The plant is choked because it's being starved of your attention.
The nutrients of your consciousness are being diverted to feed your anxieties.
This is where I want to push back or at least demand some practical mechanics, because identifying the problem is easy.
You know? Oh, for sure.
We all know we're anxious. If I recognize that the thorns of anxiety and regret are crashing my system if my soil is full of weeds, how do I actually clear the ram?
Right. What's the practical step?
Yeah. What is a practical mechanism to get out of the thorns and become the final state, the good soil?
Well, this is where the esoteric traditions like Christian contemplation or Zen get incredibly practical, but also deeply uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable how?
To overcome the thorns, these traditions point to a core practice called kenosis.
Kenosis.
Yeah. It's a Greek term that translates to the deliberate, ongoing self-emptying of the ego.
Wait, that goes entirely against our modern self-improvement culture.
Completely.
I mean, we are constantly told to stack habits, add routines, acquire more knowledge, read more books. We treat spiritual growth like hoarding.
And kenosis argues the exact opposite. You don't need more. You need drastically less.
So how does that work with anxiety?
The process of self-emptying requires you to actively surrender the illusion of material control. Our entire society is built on the promise that if you just acquire enough wealth or the right job title or enough social capital, you will finally be safe from the chaos of the world.
Which is a terrifying thing to let go of.
Yeah.
You're asking someone to drop their armor.
Kenosis requires you to look at that armor, recognize that it is paper thin and fundamentally useless against existential reality, and just let go of the grasping.
So you have to literally practice being in the void of the present moment.
Right. Clearing the debris of the past and the future. You aren't fighting the thorns with a sword. You are starving them to death by removing your attention from them.
You stop watering the weeds.
Exactly. And the sources also use this intense imagery of allowing your mind to be tilled.
Like a plow breaking up the dirt, which sounds incredibly painful.
The tilling is the hardest part of becoming the good soil. Letting yourself be tilled means allowing your rigid certainties to be shattered.
How does that usually happen?
It usually happens through a profound encounter with humility or through unavoidable suffering. It is the painful, messy process of transforming a hardened, defensive path back into a soft, receptive void.
The ego literally has to crack open to receive the seed.
It really does.
Okay, let's assume for a moment someone actually survives the tilling. They practice the self-emptying. They starve the thorns.
Yeah, they've done the work.
They are finally the good soil. Totally integrated and open, the harvest comes.
The plant grows and it thrives beautifully.
But the parable doesn't end with a generic happily ever after.
No, it gets very specific.
Right. The text notes that there are three distinct mathematical yields for this good soil. It produces 30, 60, and 100 times what was sown.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah. Is this just ancient poetic exaggeration to sound impressive? Or is there a functional reason for these three specific tiers?
Well, the early church fathers, figures like Origen and Jerome, they refused to see these as random multipliers.
And we should note, these weren't fringe mystics. These were the intellectual heavyweights architecting early Christian theology.
Absolutely. And they saw these numbers as a highly specific, progressive map of spiritual maturity.
So even after you become the good soil, you aren't finished. There are levels to the harvest.
Exactly. These three numbers represent the three distinct sequential stages of union with the divine. The first stage, the 30-fold yield, is the beginner stage of the awakened soul, known as the stage of purification.
Purification. Okay. How did that stage function in daily life?
Well, at the 30-fold level, you are living an ethical, grounded life. You have largely defeated the obvious distractions of the world. The thorns are gone. But there's still immense internal friction.
Like what?
You still wrestle with the remnants of your own ego.
Oh, I see. So I'm doing the right things. I'm being kind. I'm meditating. But I'm still sort of white-knuckling it. I'm making it about my own spiritual achievement.
Yes. The focus is still on the I. I am being good. I am resisting temptation. It requires a lot of conscious effort.
Got it.
It's a necessary and beautiful stage, but it is entirely egocentric.
Which implies the next stage pushes past that self-obsession. What does it take to move to the 60-fold yield?
The 60-fold is the intermediate stage, known as illumination. Moving from 30 to 60 is moving from effort to effortlessness.
Effortless. Well,
at this point, the soul isn't just wrestling its own ego. It is flooded with profound, intuitive, divine insight.
How does that manifest outwardly? Like, how would you see it in someone?
It manifests as deep, radiating compassion for humanity and a total loss of worldly gravity.
A loss of worldly gravity.
Yeah, you aren't forcing yourself to let go of wealth or status anymore. You genuinely, effortlessly do not care about them because you are illuminated by a reality that makes material obsession look absurd.
The friction is just gone.
Entirely.
The things of the world just lose their gravitational pull.
Yeah.
That sounds incredibly peaceful. But there is still one more tier. The hundredfold.
The final stage, yeah.
If you're already effortlessly compassionate and illuminated, what happens when you max out the harvest?
The 100-fold represents the ultimate final goal of the mystic. It is the stage of unification, or what the ancient Greeks called theosis.
Theosis, complete union.
Right. At the 100-fold level, the illusion of separation is entirely obliterated. There is no longer a you trying to follow God. The boundaries of the self have dissolved.
That's a huge concept.
It is. Your will is perfectly, seamlessly aligned with the divine will. As the mystic saying goes, the drop of water has returned to the ocean. You cannot tell where the drop ends and the ocean begins.
30, 60, 100. Purification, illumination, unification. I mean, it really is a masterclass in human psychology and spiritual evolution, all hidden inside an ancient story about a guy throwing seeds in the dirt.
It's brilliant.
It's a beautifully complete map.
It is. But just when you think you have the entire geography figured out, our sources throw in a completely different lens that turns this entire hierarchy inside out.
Yes, the Gnostic twist.
Yeah.
This is absolute philosophical whiplash.
It really changes everything.
So a nearly identical version of this parable of the sower appears in a very different ancient text, the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, specifically in saying 9.
Right.
For a quick bit of context, the Gnostics were an early, highly mystical sect of Christianity that focused heavily on secret inner knowledge rather than orthodox rules.
Yeah, they had a totally unique perspective.
And they looked at this exact same story and interpreted the core mechanism in a totally different way.
It all hinges on a radical reinterpretation of where the seed actually comes from.
Right. Because in everything we've discussed so far, the model is top down. The sower is up above, throwing the seed down to us mortals on earth.
It's an external truth, an external grace, trying to penetrate our minds.
But the Gnostics flipped that gravity entirely.
They did. In Gnostic thought, this parable has absolutely nothing to do with receiving an external truth coming down from the sky.
So what is the seed then?
The seed in the Gnostic reading is the divine spark of light that is already trapped within the human body.
It isn't raining down on you. It has been buried inside of you since before you were born.
Yes. The parable becomes an esoteric code about remembering your own divine origin. You aren't acquiring something new. You are uncovering something ancient.
But wait. If the seed is already inside and it isn't being thrown at me by some farmer, what is the soil in this framework?
The good soil is simply gnosis, the Greek word for inner knowing.
Inner knowing. Okay.
It is the awakened state of consciousness that allows that trapped internal spark of light to finally recognize itself, to wake up from the amnesia of the material world, and to begin the journey of returning to the source.
That completely changes the geometry of the entire spiritual pursuit.
It really does.
You aren't a piece of dirt waiting for a farmer to throw truth at you. You are the vault holding the truth.
Exactly.
The soil is just the psychological condition of your mind that either suffocates that internal light with anxiety and ego, or lets it burst out into the open.
The extravagant grace we marveled at in the beginning isn't raining down on you from the heavens. It is radiating out from within you, constantly, relentlessly trying to illuminate your life.
Which brings us all the way back to the core premise. The limitless potential is already there.
It's always been there.
It's not about finding the right supply of truth. It is entirely, 100% about your receptivity to what you already carry.
The light is broadcasting.
The light is broadcasting. Which leaves us with one final, deeply provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over as you step back out into your daily grind.
The map of your inner geography is in your hands now.
If that seed of divine light is truly already inside you, radiating that extravagant grace, what is the one specific dominant thorn in your life right now that is consuming all the RAM your system needs?
What anxiety, what regret is actively draining the energy that spark needs to wake up?
Identify the thorn. Starve it of your attention.
Pull it by the roots.
And see exactly what kind of harvest is waiting in the soil of your own mind.